It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. A key exit poll shows British Prime Minister David Cameron's Conservatives on course to win the most seats in Parliament. On the other hand, it falls just short of an outright majority in the 650-member House of Commons. The survey, released Thursday by national broadcasters just minutes after polls closed, showed Conservatives winning 316 seats to the opposition Labour Party's 239. The Scottish Nationalist Party is expected to win 58. It could emerge as the power broker, as VOA's Al Pessin reports.
The key group is likely to be the Scottish National Party, and its leader, Nicola Sturgeon, has made clear she will do everything she can to prevent the formation of another Conservative-led government. Experts say that would result in either a fractious and unstable government or a minority Labour-only government, with Scottish support on each vote to be negotiated. Either way, British voters might well find themselves at the polls again long before the scheduled 5-year parliamentary term ends. Al Pessin, London.
The International Criminal Court in The Hague announced that former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo will be going on trial November 10th. Mr. Gbagbo and his close aide Charles Goudet are charged with crimes against humanity, including murder and rape, allegedly carried out after a disputed 2010 presidential election. More violence rocked the streets of Burundi's capital on Thursday. Burundi has seen almost daily violent protests since President Pierre Nkurunziza announced last month that he will run for a third term, something his opponents say is unconstitutional. Witnesses and Burundi's Red Cross say three people were killed in clashes around Bujumbura on Thursday. This is VOA News. U.S. and Saudi officials have agreed to pursue a humanitarian bombing pause in Yemen, where the fighting has forced thousands of people to flee. At a news conference in Riyadh Thursday, Secretary of State John Kerry and his Saudi counterpart, Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeer, said efforts were underway to forge a 5-day ceasefire.
An understanding that needs to be reached that neither party is going to exploit the humanitarian pause.
Secretary Kerry and the Saudi foreign minister said the ceasefire would be renewable. Al-Qaeda's branch in Yemen says a U.S. airstrike killed one of its top leaders last month. Nasser bin Ali al-Ansi, his eldest son, and several other militants were killed by an airstrike on the Yemeni port city of Mukalla. Ansi had claimed responsibility on behalf of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula for the January terrorist attack on the Charlie Hebdo magazine in Paris, which used cartoons to mock Islam. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter says the American military is starting to train moderate Syrian rebels to fight against Islamic State militants on the ground in Syria. Secretary Carter says that 90 highly vetted individuals began training at a secure location, which he did not disclose, and that the program will gradually expand. A U.S. appeals court ruled that the clandestine National Security Agency's massive domestic data collection program is illegal. VOA's Michael Bowman has details.
A 3-judge federal panel in New York wrote that, quote, Congress cannot reasonably be said to have ratified a program of which many members of Congress and all members of the public were not aware. At issue is the NSA's collection of what the spy agency calls metadata, millions of records of phone calls, including the numbers dialed but not the content of the calls. Launched in the aftermath of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, the surveillance was unknown to almost all Americans until former NSA contractor Edward Snowden leaked sensitive documents before fleeing the country. Michael Bowman, The Capitol.
Residents in the Midwestern U.S. states of Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, and Nebraska are cleaning up after a series of tornadoes strafed the region, killing one person and injuring at least 12 others. More than 40 tornadoes touched down across the region, damaging about 36 homes, as well as businesses and farmland. U.S. officials say steel spikes will be added to the White House fence in an effort to beef up security in the wake of a series of fence-jumping security breaches on its grounds. The steel spikes will measure 18 centimeters tall, with a 1-centimeter steel pencil point at the top. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There were more protests on Thursday against Burundian President Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term.
If Nkurunziza pretend to be strong, why then is he seeking to annihilate his opponent? It's a proof that really he's only strong for violence, not strong for democracy.
Agathon Rwasa is leader of Burundi's largest opposition group. He is also calling for international intervention in Burundi. UN peacekeepers in the DRC say they want the army's full cooperation. Nigerian refugees are being forced to leave Niger, and Liberia looks forward to being declared Ebola-free tomorrow, Saturday.
We are excited to see that Liberia has gone the two incubation periods required by the World Health Organization for our country to be Ebola-free.
Talbot Nyesua is Liberia's Assistant Minister of Health for Preventive Services. And the Global Shea Butter Alliance meets next Monday in New York City at the industry's first-ever sustainable conference. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Fresh political violence in Burundi has left three people dead and at least 13 others wounded as demonstrations continue against President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term. Demonstrators say supporters of the government, with the help of police, have been attacking them, allegations the police and the ruling party have denied. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Witnesses and a Red Cross official say the latest unrest occurred Thursday after police intervened to stop clashes between the president's supporters and opponents in the capital, Bujumbura. In the neighborhood of Sibutoke, protesters clashed with police officers. Demonstrators say supporters of the president threw a grenade at them, killing their colleagues and injuring others. Olivier, who only gave his first name, says he witnessed the attack. They threw three grenades in Sibitoke, First Avenue near the mosque, he says. In the other place where they threw the two grenades, they shot one person in the head. And there are those who were injured and were taken to the hospital. Burundi's Red Cross says the grenade attack killed two people and injured three. Red Cross spokesman Alex Manirekazi says the other person killed Thursday was burned to death. VOA's Central Africa Service reports the man was believed to be a member of the ruling party's youth wing and was attacked by opposition supporters in the Nyakibiga area in central Bujumbura. Manirakiza says the Red Cross has recorded more than 210 people wounded since the protest began last month. He says the organization is coping so far but has reached out to other groups for help in dealing with the situation.
We are in contact with Caritas Burundi, Handicap International, and Doctors Without Borders. With Doctors Without Borders, they promised us to avail more ambulances.
Bujumbura has seen protests almost every day since the president announced his plans last month to run for a third term. Demonstrators say Mr. Nkurunziza is violating a two-term limit in the constitution, but Burundi's constitutional court ruled he could run because he was elected by parliament, not voters, for his first term in 2005. Nkurunziza vowed in a speech Wednesday that if he's re-elected, it will be his last term. He also called for an end to the protest, saying it is important the June 26 elections be held in a peaceful atmosphere. Human rights groups say the government and its supporters are using violence and intimidation against the protesters and opposition. On Wednesday, security forces arrested one of the presidential candidates accused of organizing protests. Independent presidential candidate Agathon Rwasa says he's also a target for his political stand.
I got the tip from an officer of the police. Told me, see guy, take care. There are men there who are coming to hunt you. They could harm me. And it is something which is really hard to understand. If Nkurunziza pretend to be strong, why then is he seeking to annihilate his opponent? It's a proof that really he's only strong for violence, not strong for democracy.
Rwasa's wife was attacked and injured last month by armed gunmen in Bujumbura. President Nkurunziza is expected to officially present his candidacy papers to the Electoral Commission this Saturday. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Bujumbura.
The leader of Burundi's main opposition party, the National Liberation Forces, FNL, has called for the country's upcoming election to be postponed due to what he says is ongoing tension and violence. Agathon Rwasa, a former rebel leader turned politician, also called for the intervention of the international community to ensure the country's peace and stability before any election can be held. Rwasa, who met with foreign ministers from the East African community on Wednesday, said Mr. Nkurunziza is to blame for the current violence.
I totally support the position of AU, and I have already just proposed such a thing in different meetings I had with some officials, including the panel of foreign ministers we met yesterday, because there is no security at all. So in this condition, how one can pretend to organize a peaceful election when there is a turmoil of that kind in the nation? And also, there is no room for democratic election once the constitution is violated. I mean that the position of CNDD-FDD and President Nkurunziza to run for a third term is totally unacceptable, because it is against the constitution and it is against the Arusha agreement.
You met foreign leaders of the East African community. What was the takeaway?
It was just a fact-finding meeting, because they are about to organize a summit which is due to take place in Dar es Salaam the 14th this month. So they heard the president of the republic and his ministers, then they came to hear from the political parties. And those supporting CNDD-FDD and those opposed to CNDD-FDD. So I think they have gone back well-equipped as to be able to prepare a good meeting about the situation in Burundi. Maybe can we just wait till they hold the meeting and we will know what is their decision.
Have you reached out to the African Union for their intervention in this instance?
We've been asking all the partners to Burundi to intervene, because the Arusha agreement was reached because there was the involvement of the international community, the African Union, the European Union, as well as the United Nations. So we cannot accept that one can make changes his way while this could be harmful to the nation. By the way, I may even say that Nkurunziza, if he would be aware that he's president of Burundi because of the Arusha agreement, then he will remind himself and his fellows that, after all, there is a minimum of gratitude one must show to Burundians and international community. We must absolutely show that we are people who can understand what civilization is and not continue trying to be barbaric.
Agathon Rwasa is the leader of Burundi's main opposition party, the National Liberation Forces. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Bujumbura. The United Nations mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as MONUSCO, has called for more cooperation with the Congolese army after two peacekeepers were killed and 13 wounded in an ambush in Benin territory near the Ugandan border. The mission says the Ugandan Islamist ADF rebels are suspected of carrying out the attack and has warned other groups against collaborating with terrorism. Nick Long has more from Benin.
The call follows two attacks on the mission in Beni territory this week. On Monday, a UN mission helicopter with the force commander on board came under fire, its fuel tank was hit, and it had to make an emergency landing. The next day, a MONUSCO patrol of Tanzanian troops was ambushed on the road north from Beni. Two peacekeepers were killed and 13 wounded during the attack. Two civilians were also killed. According to the UN mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the patrol was not accompanied by Congolese soldiers. It also has blamed the shooting down of its helicopter on unidentified assailants and the ambush on suspected ADF fighters. Speaking to reporters at the ambush site Wednesday, MONUSCO Force Commander General Carlos Alberto dos Santos Cruz referred to the enemy several times as bandits. The situation cannot continue, he says, with bandits killing soldiers of the Congolese army and MONUSCO blue helmets and civilians, including many women and children. The governor of North Kivu province, Julien Paluku, also visited the scene of the ambush and paid tribute to the peacekeepers who lost their lives. He expressed doubts about the attacker's identity. It is too soon to blame one faction or another, he says, but he reminds reporters he recently denounced an incursion of Rwandan troops in North Kivu and that local civil society had also denounced an infiltration of unidentified forces in Beni territory. The recent attacks with heavy weapons tend to confirm those reports, he suggests. Rwanda has denied that its troops made an incursion. The Congolese army and MONUSCO also said this week that on Sunday, more than 100 heavily armed ADF attacked an army position at Kokola, near the site of the subsequent ambush, killing four Congolese troops for the loss of 16 on their own side. MONUSCO says the attackers were wearing new uniforms, similar to those worn by the Congolese army. For months, there have been rumours here the ADF have collaborators, including within the security services, according to a UN Radio Okapi report. A spokesman for Beni's civil society group, Teddy Kataliko, commented on the rumours. There is no shortage of accomplices, he says, adding the ADF has developed a strong spy network. He calls for the government to dismantle that network. The head of MONUSCO, Martin Kobler, said, "We definitely need to resume cooperation between the FARDC, Congolese Army, and the MONUSCO military force to secure the territory of Beni." Nick Long for VOA News, Beni.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, the 8th day of May, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The United Nations Refugee Agency is expressing concern that Niger is forcing Nigerians away from Lake Chad and their livelihoods in the wake of a deadly battle with the Boko Haram extremist group. Chris Stein reports from Yola in Nigeria.
Thousands of Nigerians who worked in the fishing industry are being forced away from Lake Chad by the government of Niger and heading back into Nigeria, according to authorities on both sides of the border. The order comes in the wake of an attack by the Boko Haram extremist group on the island of Karamga in Lake Chad last month that killed at least 74 Niger soldiers and civilians. Alhaji Mohamed Kanar is the Northeast Coordinator for Nigeria's Emergency Management Agency.
So from the first 3 days, we received nearly 4,000, and in fact, another batch of about nearly 3,000 above. We are now on the process of registration.
Boko Haram's six-year rampage across northeastern Nigeria has displaced more than 1 million Nigerians. The attack in Niger came 3 months after Nigeria's northern neighbor joined a multinational offensive aimed at ending the extremist group's quest to impose strict Sharia law on northeastern Nigeria. Carl Steinecker is the country representative for the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, in Niger. He says Niger's government last week ordered civilians living on islands in Lake Chad to leave. Those islands are home to both Nigerians and Nigerians working in the fishing industry. But while citizens of Niger are moving into cities and towns, Nigerians have nowhere to go but back across the border, Steinecker says.
People's livelihoods have been destroyed because they have been told you can no longer live and work on the lake. And now they are told, okay, but in any event, we take you back to your country. So they say yes. What other choices, options they have?
The migrant workers are being sent on trucks into Nigeria's Yobe state, which has been ravaged by the Boko Haram insurgency. Steinecker says the returning Nigerians are being put at risk.
Even if they are migrants, the question is it appropriate to send them back, and is it the right way in this is being handled? And I guess in both cases it is no.
After a meeting on Thursday, Steinecker says government officials agreed to a plan with aid agencies that will better allow them to assist the returning Nigerians. Chris Stein for VOA News, Yola, Nigeria.
An official of Liberia's health ministry says the country is excited in anticipation of being declared Ebola-free. Tomorrow, Saturday, May 9th, will mark the 42nd day of no new Ebola cases in Liberia, and the World Health Organization and President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf are expected to declare the country Ebola-free. But Tolbo Nyeswa, Assistant Minister of Health for Preventive Services, said while Liberians are happy about the coming end to their nightmare, the country will remain vigilant, particularly with neighboring Guinea and Sierra Leone still experiencing new Ebola cases.
We are excited to see that Liberia has gone the two incubation periods require International World Health Organization for our country to be Ebola-free. And so the second wave of the Ebola virus disease outbreak that started in May in Liberia is over because we've done the 42-day milestone that we achieved. So we are trained by this progress and significant progress made by our people under the leadership of a system that the government set up under the leadership of the president, the incident management system of the Ministry of Health. And so, yeah, this is great. The only caution is that the region is still having transmission of disease, and so we are still remaining very much vigilant.
Is Liberia planning any kind of celebration? I mean, we are looking forward to the day, Saturday. What is the government going to do? What are the people going to do?
I know that on this day for sure, the incident management team, you know, the government created a command and control center in Liberia. Our international partners and all of the partners and all that in this fact together in our country will meet at the command center where we've come together and brainstorm on what has happened and see the expectation. Further affirmation of the World Health Organization saying, yes, Liberia has reached 42 days max. The airplane should return. Technically, there is no transmission of disease taking place. And I know also the government should be planning at the highest level for some celebration on Monday. And I think the Minister of Information, Culture, and Tourism will be in the best position to speak about this program. I'm a technician and I speak on the technical part.
Has your government been engaged or involved in some kind of experimental Ebola vaccine?
The second trial phase of the Ebola vaccine enrollment is finished. We inoculated over 1,000 persons. The data verification committee is going through the records right now. There is some good progress on the response capacity of the Ebola vaccine. Based on the number of persons that we needed about 600 people, but we've gone beyond that number. And so it's good progress there on that front.
Talba Nyesua is Liberia's Assistant Minister of Health for Preventive Services. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Global Shea Alliance is gathering some of the industry's leaders in New York on Monday to focus on the industry's first ever sustainable program. The alliance, which is made up of more than 370 members from 25 countries, works to help the millions of women who gather, treat and sell shea butter throughout West Africa to earn a living from their work. Grace Perkins, a spokesperson for the Alliance, tells Ricky Shryak the New York meeting hopes to empower women throughout Africa who work in the shea butter industry.
So our sustainability program, that was launched in 2014. And so this past year has been registering GSA members as sustainability partners. And these partners have committed to undertaking projects for a more sustainable shea industry. And so when we had our members together, that's kind of what's cool about the sustainability program, that it's all designed by our members. And then together they outlined what we have now, which is 6 work streams for the most critical challenges facing the shea industry. And then they outline solutions that these sustainability partners could take up in order to strengthen the industry and make sure that we still have a secure supply of shea kernels in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years from now.
And what are some of those challenges that the Global Alliance will be discussing in New York this Monday?
What we looked at when our members first put the program together, one of the biggest things is having warehouses for women shea collectors. And so women shea collectors, they need an incentive and a place to aggregate their shea kernels. Our members have identified is that these women collectors, there are 16 million women collectors across Africa who are in the shea industry. They need a place to store and aggregate their kernels, so it gives them an incentive to continue the industry and that we still have a secure supply. So we're, our members are building warehouses where these women can bring their produce. And then also in line with that, They're doing business development services so that women's groups are more empowered to manage and operate these warehouses.
Over the past few years, Shea has really taken off in popularity as a beauty product for the rest of the world. Have you guys seen an increase in Shea consumption?
Definitely. As part of our sustainability program, we've seen the Shea industry double in the past 10 years. And so it's growing. More people are learning about it. Part of what we're going to do in New York is promote the Shea industry. And so that the end users, not only consumers in North America and the United States know about Shea, but also the end users. So our favorite brands from the United States are more aware of where it comes from. And then the stories of the 16 million women who are working in this industry.
Grace Perkins is spokesperson for the Global Shea Alliance. She spoke with Ricky Shrike from Accra. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. 8 countries share the unprecedented distinction of being the most improved African men's teams, according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Algeria, Burundi, Comoro Islands, Lesotho, Morocco, Rwanda, South Africa and Uganda are jointly Africa's most improved teams. Mauritania has slipped by the widest margin in the world. Ranked 20th worldwide, Algeria is Africa's highest placed team on the FIFA list. African champions Ivory Coast are 23rd, Ghana 26th, Senegal 36th, Cape Verde Islands 37th, Guinea 41st, Nigeria 45th, Cameroon 48th, Republic of Congo 49th, and Egypt 51st. In Nigeria, African champions Nigeria Super Falcons host their peers from Mali in the first leg of their women's football qualifier for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Abuja tomorrow, Saturday. Meanwhile, the Democratic Republic of Congo hosts Gabon in a friendly match in Kinshasa today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Zambia welcome Malawi in Lusaka. Turning to basketball, the draws for the Africa Women's Basketball Championship takes place in Yaounde, Cameroon tomorrow, Saturday. Teams already qualified for the event in September are Algeria, defending champions Angola, Gabon, Mali, Mozambique, Senegal, South Africa, Uganda, and hosts Cameroon. 3 more teams will be named through the wild card system. In rugby, South Africa plays Samoa as Kenya challenge New Zealand in Group B action at the start of the penultimate leg in this season's IRB Sevens series in Glasgow, Scotland tomorrow, Saturday. Going into this penultimate contest in the 9-leg series, South Africa topped the overall standings with 129 points. Kenya is 13th with 33 points, while Zimbabwe is 20th with 1 point. Finally, in cycling, the 3-day Africa Mountain Bike Continental Championship gets underway in Musenze, Rwanda tomorrow, Saturday. Cyclists from Ivory Coast, Kenya, Lesotho, Mauritius, Namibia, South Africa, Uganda, Zimbabwe, and hosts Rwanda are vying to excel at this event, which is a qualifier for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. More violence rocked the streets of Burundi's capital on Thursday, as the top African Union official said the country is too volatile to hold elections scheduled for next month. Speaking in Addis Ababa, the chairperson of the African Union Commission said the AU will not send observers to Burundi for the planned June 26 election. That is it for this Friday, May 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Marco Ouman, along with our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying have a lovely weekend, Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA newsfeed. voanews.com.
African music mix.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.